Welcome to the Nerd Alternative Podcast, a sweet melting pot of all things nerdy. We talk about things from all corners of the nerddom. Yes, today we have, now I don't want to say, we have a counsellor here. I'm scared to say names now. Like, we have Counsellor Joshua.
I'm Counsellor of Therapy and Love.
We have, I'm going to call you Agent Zero now.
Wait, me?
Yeah, you're Agent Zero.
How can I be Agent Zero when they know who I am? But I mean, I'll take it. It sounds cool.
We have Agent Zero. Today, unfortunately, Hassan is not with us. We didn't lock him in the studio, don't worry.
We miss him.
He shall be returning soon, hopefully. And today, we are going to talk about Marvel and how they tackle social issues. You know, those things that we love talking about so much. And, I mean, you guys have been watching Falcon and Winter Soldier, I'm sure. And, you know, based on some of the topics that they're tackling there, we thought we'd talk about some other times that Marvel have kind of tried their hand at dealing with some issues. But before that,
E3 has been announced and is all digital.
Oh, yes. I mean, how is E3 still going? I was so shocked when I saw this. Like, who is even, who's attending? Is Nintendo attending? Yes, they are. Xbox as well. So yeah, it's going to be an all digital event airing from June the 12th to the 15th. I mean, I feel like at this stage, we don't really, how relevant is E3 nowadays?
It's true. Especially that literally the whole of last year, we had everybody else just release their own thing, didn't we? So
exactly.
That, didn't they? So.
I think what we see this year is maybe what the future of E3 is supposed to be like, if you know what I mean. I guess as well, because, you know, they do like demos and things like that on the conference. I'm curious as to if, you know, they might release demo codes or things like that, seeing as like, is do you need to buy tickets or is it just going to be free? Like, I'm quite curious as to how it's going to, like, because we watch E3 as a stream, but there's also people that, like we were saying earlier, Josh, that, you know, they get tickets, they pay or whatever, and they go in there and they queue up for all of these booths to play games. I wonder if there'll be a way that they could do that virtually. That'd be pretty neat.
Yeah. Thing that lets you play the games, like a quick demo of the game.
Yeah, like, you know, imagine if there was, you know, like a trailer, and then when the trailer ends, it's like, yeah, here's a code, you can play it for like half an hour or something.
That'd be cool. Embracing the Ready Player One feature that we're stepping ourselves into.
Don't say that. I got a 4K monitor now, so I'm like,
there you go.
I want a head. Well, the headset won't change anything. But yes, E3 is there. It is still breathing, kind of like Walking Dead. But moving on. A University of Victoria study has found that specialized video games could improve brain function in disabled children. Ram, would you like to tell us a bit about that?
So basically they've been doing like studies to see, they've been making like kind of special games and testing like brain function, like you just said, in children who are disabled, and seeing kind of whether it's like having any improvement on their cognitive skills. Is that what the word is? And so far the studies have been like proving quite successful, that they're able to like trace a visible improvement. So they're just kind of carrying on with that. But I just thought it was cool because I've been seeing a lot of stuff about the way in which games, I don't know, just improve people's general like mental health, but also particularly like disabled people, and also I think last year we talked about them releasing like a console that was like friendly for anyone who is with specific disabilities, basically, and I just thought it was cool that the gaming industry is becoming a bit more inclusive and useful in a way that's not just about entertainment.
I feel like I feel like there's been loads of, not loads, let me not say loads. There has been other studies, I'm sure, that kind of show the benefits of video games. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially in like kids and stuff. Obviously, all things within moderation, but yeah, man, I guess the negative stigmatism or stigma of like video games is kind of being shaken off a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I guess the more that happens,
especially during lockdown, actually,
yeah, that's true. So yeah, play video games, everyone. Get your children, get your dogs, get your babies, get everyone to play video games. But yes, steering away from the video game news a little bit, we're going to talk about some trailers. I'll get the one out of the way that I guess no one really we here care about the least is, well, not in a bad way.
What?
I was going to say JoJo Part 6.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I thought
that.
You meant
No. I say that to say because I don't think anyone here is on JoJo except for Hassan, who's not here today. And it was a teaser, more of an announcement. So I guess there wasn't really much to
look at. What's JoJo Part 6?
You don't know JoJo's Bizarre Adventure? You've never heard of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. It's like a really wacky, campy like anime. You should check it out. You might like it.
All I saw from the trailers was just loads of people talking about manga readers spoiling. Apparently JoJo manga readers are like notorious for spoiling the anime. the manga,
that is
so I just kept seeing memes of that. That's my reference point for this.
Oh joy. Well, the one that probably everyone's seen is the Loki trailer. I watched it twice and I still was quite like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Josh, have you seen it?
I have, but I'm sorry to break it down to everybody. I'm not the biggest Loki fan and I don't get his fandom. I don't get it.
I don't get his fandom, but mostly because his fandom is like teenage girls who love Tom Hiddleston and I just don't think he's attractive.
Yeah. I mean, it's not for him to be James Bond as well. And I'm like, maybe a villain.
I think it's also I think also like people's obsession with Loki is that he's like, he's fake deep. I feel like people project onto him things that he's not actually as a character. And I do like Loki. I just think that people make him out to be like the greatest anti-hero in the world, and he's not.
I think also, Marvel villains are kind of trash, so whenever you get a half decent one, they got to put him on the pedestal. You know, look at Thanos. Like, I think between him and Thanos are the only two. I mean, I'm feeling Zemo at the moment, I can't lie, but like apart from, and Killmonger, but I feel like they just kill them usually. Yeah. Like any half decent villain is dead. So I think that's why people hang on to him. He's a bit overrated, but he's cool.
You better spoiler alert if you haven't seen freaking, I don't even remember which Avengers it was. It might have been the first or second one. Maybe the first one. Not the first one, I'm sorry. And was it Endgame? No, it wasn't Endgame. It was the one, Infinity War. Loki in Infinity War was pretty amazing. Like that scene with
yeah.
And then everything after that was a little bit shallow, but that scene with him in it was pretty good. Like I felt that. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, no, I hear that.
He's also a really good actor. Like he's really Wilson is really good in the role, but
yeah. I'm gonna try and recap this synopsis from my head. All I'm gonna say is Loki has broken time, hasn't he, by stealing the Tesseract, mm-hmm. and I feel like he was picked up by the time
university, the universe keep. Well, I was calling them by my name, but yeah, timekeepers, yeah, sure.
Timekeepers, yeah, and basically he has to.
Time lords, would you say?
The time lords crossover. But I do remember in the trailer there was a clip where he was kind of in like a ruined New York. So I wonder if we're gonna get some, you know, multiverse hopping shenanigans. Who knows? Wasn't there the whole President Loki? So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Even though I'm not the biggest Loki fan, but I feel like right now. When Marvel was gone, I thought I was okay. But no, I mean, I guess I was. I guess that's how it is, isn't it?
But then yeah, but you were all like, back, you were like, yeah, you know, I think the superheroes' time has come to an end.
Yeah,
look at you now.
I was rationalizing. I was trying to. And I'm like a baby goat sucking at the teats. But yeah, when is Loki out, Gene?
I don't know, but I can't wait. Marvel's not missing at the moment. Marvel's just hit after hit after. Marvel come like Drake. It's amazing.
Oh my god! Yeah, no, real talk. Good Night Mummy, in film news. Has anyone watched Good Night Mummy? I feel like I'm probably the only one that's seen that film here.
Yeah,
I don't know what that is.
It's another film that's getting an American remake. I feel like it was. Let me not say Swedish and then I'm wrong. It's a really good like horror, psychological thriller type beat. It's being remade and Naomi Watts is, I believe she's starring and producing.
I haven't seen her in anything for a while.
Yeah, same, actually.
What was the last thing? I feel like I need to look up her filmography.
It's Austrian. The film is Austrian. It's a really good film. We'll watch it, man. It's good. But yeah, I just thought I'd chuck that in there because I like that film. So
did you guys already discuss the Suicide Squad in the last episode?
Yeah,
we did.
We did. Sorry, mate.
Bit late
to that.
Thanks for the invite, guys.
And our last bit of news is Noel Clarke is to receive an honorary BAFTA for outstanding British contribution to cinema.
Good for him.
Ram, do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
I don't have anything more to add, just that's good that he's being recognized for like his achievements, especially him not being like, I feel like he makes very specific movies, or like movies that I feel don't usually get made, if that makes sense, by Britain. And so, yeah, I feel like it's good that he's getting recognized also. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say it in case I jinx myself. But yeah.
What
I saw him outside of a station one time. I don't know why.
The fame. I was going to ask, what is your favorite, like, Noel Clarke film or TV show? Like, because I feel like I used to, like, see him more in things, like, back in the day.
Yeah.
I know he's, and I feel like he's still in that Bulletproof show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, what would you say, you guys, is top thing that he's in?
Am I gonna come out and actually say that I've not really watched a lot of his stuff apart from Bulletproof?
I mean, I want to say Kid Hood because I just feel like, I don't know, that's had the most like the lasting impression on me, even though
he wasn't in Bulletproof, by the way. But go on, Ram.
He is in Bulletproof.
Wait, no, I'm thinking of Bullet Boy. Sorry, yes. Sorry.
I think you're getting mixed up because Thingy is...
Ashadi is in, Bulletproof as well.
Yeah,
go on.
I was just going to say because I feel like that's the most memorable film. And I think also like when I watched that, I hadn't really seen a film like that was an American, if that makes sense. And even though it's
like a hood film.
Yeah, even though it's not necessarily what I relate to, it was still... very, I don't know, refreshing. I think it's important to have like diverse black filmmakers, and I kind of feel like it's a shame that I don't think our like all the next generation really has a Noel Clarke at the moment. So I think him being honored, maybe that will inspire like younger people to who maybe haven't seen his work to go back and like someone else to make more stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, I think it's probably going to be Kid Hood as well. I did like him in Doctor Who, I can't lie, but maybe that was just because he was a black guy on Doctor Who when it got rebooted, you know. I think for our like age kind of range as well, the same thing goes for Kid Hood around the time that came out. And like, I'm sure we were all like in primary or secondary school, so I guess it felt really...
I mean, I had to watch Kid Hood like in my teen years because I was 10 when it came out.
Oh, God. Well, yeah.
Is that really bad that I've never seen it?
You've never seen Kiro? Wait.
Whoa. But the other one I have watched on Netflix.
There's three of them.
Nah, I've not seen any of them.
Oh my god. Are you talking about Top Boy, the Netflix one?
I have watched Top Boy though.
Is he in Top Boy? I haven't seen Top Boy.
He's not in Top Boy, I don't think. But I feel like the reason that I'm like, sorry, what did you say, Josh?
No, sorry, I'm just trying to regain some street cred.
What? Oh, I was just gonna say because
Friday.
I feel like because Top Boy is written by a white creator, or was made by a white person, I just kind of, that's why I appreciate Noel Clark, because I feel like he's talking about an experience that's like relevant to him, as opposed to like, I mean, that white guy might know, but he's writing about Black people in the hood, and I don't know what his background is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. But yeah, shout out.
No, Top Boy is really good though.
To the main event, Marvel getting political.
Sorry.
Yeah, he will be. As I mentioned earlier, we had a couple months ago, WandaVision, which surprisingly, you know, went quite deep into themes of grief, which we didn't think Marvel was going to hit them levels. Mm. And now we have Falcon and Winter Soldier, which every single episode, in my opinion anyway, it as they progress, it seems like they kind of more confidently kind of talk about certain issues.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Progressively as it gets on, and you know, obviously the show's not finished yet, so we're not going to try and say it's great for that or whatever. So we thought, you know, let's take a look back, and I mean we didn't include every single theme in every single Marvel film. I just kind of cherry picked some. If you guys have any others that I didn't like include that you want to talk about, we can. And we thought we'll decide whether they kind of successfully hit the mark or not. Before we do that, though, I want to ask, what would you actually define as kind of successfully addressing a kind of social political issue?
I think for me, it has to... Okay, obviously it's a Marvel film, so I'm not expecting it to be some kind of long, like, philosophical exploration of whatever the issue is. But I do think there needs to be some kind of, like, meaningful / not surface level depth to it, otherwise it just feels a bit like fake deep. Why am I saying fake deep so often? But yeah, it feels kind of fake deep. So I would say something that's successful is like something that is recognizable as a theme and not really something that they've just like tacked on, that or something that you're kind of you're reaching for. I don't think it should be a reach if it's successfully talking about something, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I hear that. Josh?
I think something that's successful makes you want to do your own research on it. I think anything that inspires you to go beyond the film, like, let's say, Judas and the Black Messiah, anything that makes you want to do more research, I think that's when it's successful, because through a film medium, you're only going to get one point of view. Well, not one point of view, but you're only going to get like surface level stuff. If it makes you react, it makes you want to do more, makes you want to reach out more, or makes you understand something on a greater level, then I think that's where it moves the needle. Like, I think a perfect show that does that for me, what did that for me was Euphoria, for sure, because I didn't ever really get the trans sort of plight, in a sense. I didn't understand it to a level that made me want to say, oh my goodness, there's so much more education that needs to be done. There's so much from a child's perspective, from an adult's perspective, there's just so much more that needs to be done. And I think when a medium makes you want to do that, I think that's when its message has really come across, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I do feel like there also has to be a kind of bit of subtlety as well. I don't, maybe that could be just personal preference, but I think because of a lot of these issues, due to their nature, they are quite, you know, complex, and due to the nature of some some art and some films and stuff, they tend to be quite straightforward, clear cut, as opposed to reality. I think sometimes when some people, I guess especially in some family friendly sort of properties, that when they try and think of how to deliver this message or this theme, but make it palatable, if you get what I'm saying. Sometimes it loses some of the power. Sometimes it comes across, like you said, I'm a bit disingenuous, because you are trying to boil down a very complex theme into this is bad or seek help or something that like people might be like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I definitely think complexity and nuance in these things is something that, in my eyes, when something's successful, it kind of addresses maybe all sides of things and quite leaves you with a very objective view on things, unless something's quite clearly bad, you know.
No, that's a very good point.
So yeah, let's go. Let's just jump into some of these films. I'm actually going to start with Iron Man. I'm going to put two, I think I'm going to put two and three together, but we'll start with one. Iron Man 1. The profiting and the fallout from manufacturing war weapons.
That's been like a running theme through what Marvel have done when it comes to Tony Stark, though, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you think about his arc, even it touched on it during WandaVision, and I think it's kind of clever how they've done that as well. I think it's one of those things where Marvel did it. But I think maybe because it came out in 2008, maybe I was just too young and not aware of that message when I was looking at it. Now, thinking of it now, yeah, it's clearly a theme that they've been doing, but I've never really thought of it when I was watching it. Did any of you guys?
Go on, Ram. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, well, I guess also as a kid, I wouldn't have really like taken it in properly, but I think that like that is such an integral part of Tony Stark's character anyway. Like even in the, we're kind of seeing this man as someone who's gone through like a redemption arc of sorts, but is continually kind of like in the comics with him being an alcoholic, kind of recovering from the fallout of like what he's done to make the money that he has. So I guess it's not something that I appreciated until I was older, but it's a very like clear part of his character and his trajectory. And I guess also it kind of feeds in, I guess, to his obsession with wanting to be a hero and like almost overcompensating for all the harm that he's caused in the later films. I think he's probably like the hero who actually has the clearest arc in like all the movies and all his movies, like an emotional one, now that I think about it.
I guess that's kind of because, well, part of it might be to do with how that arc and his character kind of can be so clearly translated into our world. I think that's always what was quite sad about Tony Stark, is that thing of like there will never be that guy in the real world. it just won't ever happen. I mean, Do you think that Josh is right. It has kind of run throughout the films, and the kind of theme of where his tech's going and how far it reached. But do you think that Iron Man dealt with war profiteering well?
I think so. I would say yes, because I feel like it kind of develops. I mean, I think obviously it could always go deeper, but I think we do kind of have to judge this as like, this is a Marvel film, so how deep is it really going to get? And I do think like in comparison to like some of the issues that he faces in the comics, we don't really see that. Like Tony's never an alcoholic in the MCU because, well, family friendly stuff. So I would say so.
No, wait, hold on. He was an alcoholic in Iron Man 2.
Okay, but was he
He was a Disney alcoholic, yes.
Like, I feel like, yeah, okay. Fine.
You don't remember when he crashed the party and he was in his suit?
Yeah.
I meant he's right. It's so bad.
it really is.
I
think you've got a good point there. I'm just about like, yeah, at the end of the day, we are talking about Disney. So I guess, yeah. And especially when it comes to war, right? Like, I don't know how much accountability, where the accountability should kind of go. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a necessary evil on one side, but to the guy who's getting bombed with your tech, like,
I don't think they've done it well. I don't think so. Because like Tony Stark, always with his gadgets, always seems very, very cool. So it's like, okay, yeah, he might have bombed Sokovia, but you know what? That Iron Man suit is pretty awesome.
I disagree because I think that because it's such a recurring theme of him thinking about the consequences of what he's like, because even in like Civil War, he's on the side of like, no, actually we can't just go off and do whatever we want. We should sign these accords and have some kind of accountability. And I think, but then that might just be me being able to follow it, but as opposed to like, I feel like if I wasn't thinking about it in this conversation, I probably wouldn't say the same thing. That I wouldn't have the same answer that I do now.
Even that, it's easy for Tony to say that because it's like the government are buying all of his weapons anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like I'm questioning Tony Stark here, but
I mean,
No, but it just seems like his character is like, yeah, we should follow the government and do what we're told. But yeah, I get that. But Tony, you made a lot of money out of selling your weapons to the government anyway. They're like your biggest consumer, bro. Like, it makes sense you want to toe the line. Mm. I'm doing what you guys do with Batman.
No, I was just about to say that, actually. But, I mean, yeah. That is a fair point. I do still think that in terms of them just keeping it in our conscious. Like, it's not like a one-off thing in that one movie, and that's it. And I think that's, like, a good, yeah. Are we rating these things on a scale?
I kind of know. I guess it's just was it done well or not? It's very casual, guys. we are not critics of
I say no.
say on the scale of successfulness, it would be like a 7 for me.
I think because this is an issue that it's very like you said, how you could never really discuss it in a meaningful way in a Disney film, especially being in these Western empires that we're from that literally have bullied the rest of the world into subjugation. It's a bit weird. What can you say?
I'm not from the West. I'm an African princess.
Oh, sorry, man. but I would say I'd give it a 6 just on the 6.5 because we did see a man who kind of didn't see the reality of what he was doing. Like, he was just profiting off of his genius, basically, and kind of seeing that and going through his own redemption to go. I'll give it a 6.
I think I'm like 5-6, but I'm do you know what? I'm looking at it from the entire perspective of Tony Stark's arc that we saw throughout the films, not just the one film. I mean, the one film, I think they did it well. Because I think there was, and I think that's why he became Iron Man as well, in a sense. But what I would say to that is that, especially because you have to look back in the time, 2008, we were still in Iraq. We're still in Iraq now, but I think we were still very much so learning more about the Americans and how the Americans used the military industrial complex to really profiteer and. Yeah. They didn't really, like they could have done more, but like you guys said, it's a Disney movie. So, and that's why I'm saying during that time, it was very intense, but they didn't really talk about it as much as they could have been. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. Let's stick on the subject of Mr. Stark. I'll bundle 2 and 3 together and say alcoholism and PTSD. PTSD we might revise. I'm gonna say let's not try to repeat it. This is a Disney film, but I didn't like the way that he had the conversation with the little boy, and he was okay, kind of thing. Mm. Like,
yeah,
that's a bit.
If only that's all you needed to solve your problems.
So I feel like a common thing that Disney or some MCU stuff likes to do is just kind of display something, and I guess because of us loving Marvel properties, we kind of try and deeply read more into it than what we may actually be being shown. But me personally, you know, I was whatever here. What do you guys think?
I think the alcoholism, clearly I forgot about it, so they did not do a good job. And I think also, like, again, I mean, I do feel like I can compare to the comics because that's the source material. I feel like that's such an ongoing issue for Tony Stark that it felt a bit like, I don't know, felt a bit, yeah, it didn't. The alcohol dependency just didn't stay in my mind.
I did like the thing of, like, you know, anyone can have, like, depression or anxiety, even if you're a millionaire. That part of it I kind of dug, you know, that it's not selective in who, you know, these illnesses choose.
I was gonna say the PTSD I think is fine, but I feel like that's because, again, it's like a repeated theme and a repeated arc of Tony's, like, right down to the last moment in Endgame where it's like, where Pepper says you can rest now because he can finally kind of, he finally kind of reaches that moment of being like, okay, everyone's okay now. Like, everyone's okay. I don't need to keep, like, making these things. I don't need to keep trying to create these, like, precautions or whatever in order to keep my family and the planet safe. So I feel like they set a good seed for the rest of the movies. Even though Iron Man 3 wasn't the best, but it was... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, isn't it that same thing that caused Ultron?
Yeah. Which is, no, but I think that's what makes it interesting, because you see how deeply it affects him that he goes the wrong way about it, because he's obsessed, basically. Like, he's traumatized in a way, I guess.
Yeah, actually, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of like, well, I don't want to compare this to trauma in that way, but, like, you know, when you are a victim of trauma, you do things that feel good in the moment, but might not necessarily be good in the long run, because you just want to deal with whatever that pain is bringing you, and you might become
narrow, like, tunnel
vision.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is the solution. This will, yeah, no, you're, yeah, yeah, I see it. Josh?
I think the alcoholism, I can't really remember it, but I've tried.
No one remembers the party.
Like, no, I remember the party now, but it's just so, like, it was a moment.
Like he had a fight with Rhodey as well.
No, he did, yeah. No, I remember it now that you brought it up. But
okay, good. Okay.
I'm trying to delete Iron Man 2. Even Iron Man 3. Iron Man 3 was the biggest letdown, because that trailer of Iron Man 3 is one of the best trailers I've ever seen in my life. It's really, like, the trailer for Iron Man 3, listeners, go look at it right now. Was so good, but then the actual film, especially that child bit, But I do like the running theme of him suffering from that PTSD and all that jazz, because I think they did that really well, and they kept that throughout. I think the moment that he went into space in Avengers, is it two? Avengers one, the first one.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah.
The moment he went into space. He was like, there was something wrong with that guy.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that they kept the running theme on that. And the fact that he was traumatized by it. But I think they did that well. But I think they're probably doing that a little bit better with Bucky, to be honest. If I'm being honest, I think they're doing it better with Bucky.
Yeah. Perhaps. We'll get to that.
Not sure.
Josh?
Oh, I'm done. Oh. That was it.
Really. Okay, yeah. All right, so... I'm not gonna give it a number. I'm just gonna say it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the depiction of, like, the trauma itself was quite well done, to be fair, mm-hmm. outside of the wider like themes or meanings. But yes, moving on to Spider-Man Homecoming. In case you guys aren't sure, there is no actual chronology to these films. So we had Spider-Man Homecoming and the alienation of the working class. And you know I'm going to love this one. Oh, wait, I just realized Vulture's not dead.
Yeah.
But then he might be flying back into the Sonyverse. But yes, back to Mr. Toomes. I forget his first name. I'm just going to call him Toomes. Vulture Toomes. Adrian Toomes, that's the one. I don't know if you guys remember the premise for him becoming a...
Yeah, I did this really well. I do like Homecoming.
I think... Yeah, I think that I don't think there's much to say. I think it definitely hit the mark. I think I don't know if it's because of Keaton's, you know, acting chops, but and the writing as well, to be fair. But I think they've done a very good job of kind of showing you how someone can kind of descend into villainy due to like. Due to no fault of their own. I mean, the way the kind... Was it the state? Was it S.H.I.E.L.D. that came in? I can't remember. I'm just going to say a body with power comes in and kind of is able to just infringe on your work like that. And just like that, you know, you could be a farmer and Bill Gates could buy a farm and be like, you know what? I'm going to put these robots in this farm and then your job is gone. Like, do you get what I'm saying? Yes.
Even on a lower level, look at it. I'm going to go Sainsbury's after this. The amount of workers that have been replaced by technology is ridiculous.
Yeah. And I feel like, especially when, if you're not, depending on where you are in life, we look at, you know, technology and just like advancements in society and not realize that this is not always an advancement for everybody, if that makes sense. Like this is gonna, might come at a cost to somebody's
livelihood.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything you guys want to add about Spider-Man?
I just wanted to say that I feel like, you know, Spider-Man, like Homecoming was the first time that I was like, oh yeah. Like, I don't know. I think it was the first time I was like very aware of like the social issue they were exploring. I don't know whether it's because for the first time we're kind of looking at people who in status are like more like where we would be basically because we're not billionaires, we're not like gods, we're not like superhumans or whatever it was. So I think the fact that they were able to like kind of trigger those thoughts in my mind, like because it was so obvious, is a good sign, I think, of like how they handled it. And because also it wasn't like this, it was so integral to the plot, if that makes sense. As opposed to it just being like a part of a character, and so they were able to kind of explore it and such a real way. And I think also it made Vulture such a compelling character because that is something that's very relatable and very feasible. That could happen to any of us, regardless of like a superhero setting or not.
I mean, even with like COVID and before COVID, like just gentrification in general, we literally always see kind of bigger businesses, people with more money and more power kind of squeezing out smaller like independent workers. I guess it is very in this time we're like hyper aware of it as well as it's happening, so I guess it kind of really resonates, I suppose.
I think also it was very because Peter Parker is also not like a rich, it was just a very on the ground kind of story, and I think on the ground kind of issue, which was the first time I think we saw that actually in the MCU, I feel like.
Yeah, but, yeah. No, I'm thinking about it for Captain. Yeah. I agree. Josh, anything you want to add?
No. I totally agree with you guys. To be honest, I think it made, and it also made you want to kind of root for Vulture in the end. Like, he didn't have to do what he did, but then again, there was a little bit of something that was it. Blue collar worker, is it?
Yeah.
Like you kind of wanted him to win. Like he didn't do it the right way, and he crossed a few lines. But at the end of the day, if they didn't screw him over in the first place, he probably wouldn't have gone the way he went.
No, this is it. Yeah,
and I think that's the situation with most people when they go into, like it's the situation where people are like, oh, this young black man, why is he getting into drugs? And it's just like, well, it's like, I don't want to be super simplistic when I say this, but it's because of you people who don't understand that the pain and suffering that they're going through in their household. I'm not saying it's not a blanket term for everyone, but I remember when I went to a talk and they literally said, the reason why I got into this is because my mom couldn't afford a loaf of bread. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that kind of reality needs to hit and people need to understand it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah. And you know, even you said about doing it the wrong way. I mean, he was doing it the right way and he literally just lost his job to a company that probably would do it and have done things the wrong way, you know? So yeah, that's a very interesting point, to be fair. I'm going to just straight up say, I feel like this was implemented successfully. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you guys agree or disagree.
I agree.
Nice. I had Ultron down here. Do we really care?
we don't care, but I will say that it was a great example of, like, kind of what I was saying.
It ties back into
of showing how far Tony was willing to go and the mistakes that he made in his journey, but also like the implications of that for other people. Because it's not like he did something that would only impact him. He did something that, like, effectively nearly ended the world and was the beginning of grief for, well, not the beginning, the second stage of grief for Wanda. So, you know.
Yeah. I will say, though, I don't know if this is an issue or just an interesting theme. Mm. I guess the fact that Tony thought he knew, it's the whole thing of, like, I wouldn't say right and wrong is subjective, but certain ideals can be very subjective, and he thought he knew what, it's like you applying algorithm to, like, a robot, and then it turns around and says you're the problem. Like, do you get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
just interesting theme there. But yeah, anything you want to say about Ultron, Josh?
Again, no, not really. I mean, I think you hit it on there. I think it's another garbage movie, but this needs
to. Okay, moving on to a favorite. We have the Black Panther. Woo!
Ow!
Woo! And we're going to focus on Revenge on the Oppressor and Isolation as a Nation.
Michael B. Jordan. What?
I feel like there's just so much of that. So they, like, beyond those two themes.
I mean, is there any... I don't want to go to... All right. Go on, Ram. You take the lead. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, to be fair.
Why not? It's Black Panther, and we didn't have a podcast when it came out, so we couldn't even talk about it.
You know, we can do a whole episode on Black Panther. We can do a retrospective.
Okay, I would enjoy that very much.
Okay, we can do that.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say, like, I think it builds a very multi-layered argument, and talked about a lot of things that we as Black people don't always have that conversation about. So, like, there's obviously the isolation of Wakanda choosing to be, in a way, like, individualistic. I know that's not the time because it's, like, more than one person, but that's effectively what they did. Like, instead of kind of having a more, like, globalist attitude, they chose to protect what's theirs. And you can kind of see, thinking about, like, if Africa was able to protect itself from being colonized, it's kind of like, well, yeah, like, a lot of the issues that the continent has now would have been avoided if we were able to do that. So, like, in one way, you're kind of like, oh, I see why Wakanda would not want to get involved. But at the same time, you have kind of the American side and Killmonger's side of being like, well, like, if you could have protected us, then why didn't you guys? And I think it also, creates a conversation about just diaspora wars in general, which is something that I never thought I would see in a Marvel film in my entire life. Of, like, why do we, I mean, obviously there are, like, more insidious, as we've seen from Judas and the Black Messiah, reasons why there are diaspora wars beyond, like, Black people themselves, but why do we kind of separate ourselves and given the fact that, unfortunately, we all have the same kind of or similar experiences no matter where you're from, why do we kind of be like, no, I'm African-American, I'm African, I'm, and like kind of pick holes in each other when, you know, we're all kind of impacted by very similar issues.
Yeah.
And then
what did Killmonger, what was his goal again? I can't remember. I know he wanted to like extend the influence, but what
he wanted to liberate Black people all around the world by giving the weapons to liberate themselves from their oppressors and basically have the Kingdom of Wakanda instead of, you know, like the United Kingdom. And they actually did use a quote from the sun will never set on the British Empire, is that what it's called? But he said the Wakandan Empire or whatever. So yeah, he was going to colonize the world effectively, I guess.
Yeah, that's what he's on. Oh man.
Hey, really?
I didn't say anything. It wasn't even me. I would never condone that.
Josh.
Yeah.
Would you... I want to know your thoughts.
Well, I think from the moment you watch Black Panther and the moment Michael B. Jordan is speeching off that woman in the museum, from that moment, mm-hmm. as a Black person, I was like, wow. Joking, like, wow. Because, like, again, I don't expect Marvel to ever do this stuff. I don't expect Marvel to touch, especially Disney. Mr. Walt Disney himself was turning in his grave.
No.
he was but,
like, that's the thing. Like, I Black Panther was such a powerful movie. And that's why I feel like when you talk to people about it, especially like, because I've got my American cousins and stuff like that, and I just feel like sometimes they live in a warped reality. And it's interesting to see that. It's interesting to see. Because like the themes that guy touched on, like it was so incredible. Just moments like that. Forget the movie. Just some of the stuff that Killmonger was speeching off was amazing. And like you can see the hurt and the pain that he had from growing up in a different world. And I think that's the pain of Black people all across the world, really and truly. We don't know how powerful we are. Like there doesn't need to be a fictitious Wakanda because we're powerful people just in general. But we don't know how powerful we are because of the separation. But if we were to unite, I feel like there's nothing not stopping us. And I think that's what Killmonger was trying to do in violent ways. But it is what it is. The world is a violent place. You know what I mean? So in order to conquer, or in order to build or rebuild, that you have to crack some eggs, innit? And I think he was on that, but.
I mean, he was also he's literally a product of the system that is the reality for like your cousins, for example, as well.
I think also one of the like beautiful aspects of it was that kind of a few episodes ago when I was talking about tropes and the angry Black woman and just the angry Black person in general, I think that Black Panther did a really good job in showing us that angry Black person without taking away the reason why they're angry, which is where I feel like that trope is usually like really bad, because it's like everyone can see that Killmonger is justified to feel the way that he does and why he thinks the way that he does, and we can't really fault him for it because that's what the world made him and turned him into. And I think that's like a really important thing to be able to see on screen, because I think as Black people we do have a lot to be angry about, and I think that it's ridiculous for anyone to say that we should, like, sometimes we want to be angry, like, and we should be allowed to do that. But obviously, like, you know, don't go trying to kill people and stuff, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Interesting as well, which is something that could apply to, like let's say, Americans or white Americans, I guess, is the conversation of, like, when you interact with other countries, like what do you want to do? Because, you know, I don't know how charitable like the more powerful nations in this world are in other nations. I know there's like all sorts of relief that takes place in like third world countries, but I think we're probably all aware that they could do a lot more for how much wealth that some of these nations have. And I just think it's interesting, you know, like,
and also how much wealth they took. Like, technically, you're not doing anything. You're paying back what you took.
Exactly.
Maybe. Just to parallel that with, you know, the way Black Panther ended with them opening their doors and helping the people, them and that, you know?
They shouldn't have done that. I'm joking. I'm not joking. Look what happened. Cast. No, sorry. Look what happened when they opened their doors. What is the state of Wakanda at the moment? Because they got wrapped in Infinity War. So.
Yeah, they got murked instantly. They would have been.
I'm with Okoye. She just wanted a Starbucks. Jeez.
They would have been chilling like Martian Manhunter if they stayed. He probably would have been on Wakanda too. Would you say those themes of like the oppression and isolation was implemented well?
Beautifully. And I just wonder how they're going to do it again now. How are they gonna improve on that? Because for me, I say this a lot. I think it's a perfect movie. I don't know how you do a sequel to Black Panther. How do you do, especially like now after the circumstances of what's happened? It's like, how do you do a sequel to this? Like,
yeah,
I believe in Ryan Coogler. My husband.
Unless they bring Namor in and just have the Wakandans scrapping the fish people, I'll be here for that.
I'm here for that as well, actually.
But yeah, I'm gonna. All right, yeah, let's move on.
Do we have to?
Do you know what? We will do a retrospect, a deep dive and unpacking of Black Panther. We will do that, Ryan. We will do that. For time constraints, I am going to skip WandaVision because we've spoken about it. Like, we've literally done two reviews. I do want to just say, though, and I think we all agree that the way WandaVision was just able to flee... At the end of the show, and
you mean
I guess,
Wanda.
Wanda, and we were.
Vision, I guess. I mean, he just left. White Vision
flew into the sky. Yeah. And I guess we were so in our feelings that she lost her family that we just didn't register that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That was a bit of a weird.
But knowing Marvel, they might come back to it in like 10 years' time. You know.
10 years time
long. It's gonna be like the family, you know, that woman who was like, can I have my little girl? Like, it's gonna be her daughter is gonna come back, and like, I don't know, something's gonna happen,
maybe.
Yeah. And we won't spend much time on Falcon and Winter Soldier because we're probably going to review it when it's done, but just to let the people them know, as we said earlier, there are themes of PTSD, what does it mean to be a patriot, and I will
and
say
black superhero.
Yeah.
And
I think so far they're doing well, but we'll see. I just loved Zemo. I keep saying to him, I just loved his little one liners in the last episode.
Also, Black Panther is in it now, kind of. So you know.
That was the best bit about the episode.
Zemo's dancing, Josh, was the best part of that
episode. What?
And all right, let's move on, because so Winter Soldier, the surveillance state and government corruption. I feel like this is one of those things that's kind of easy to address because like the government is just like the government. If that makes sense, like we can just say the government. It's this faceless, well, it's not faceless, but you get what I'm saying. I mean I love Winter Soldier, so am I just about to be really biased? I don't know.
I think that, and I wonder how this would come across more to like American audiences, but I think that kind of anchoring this theme through Steve's character of this man who's been this like loyal soldier his whole life and has like just been like, yeah, like I'm doing the right thing by being the army can do no wrong, and suddenly being faced with actually maybe authority, like maybe you have to think for yourself outside of what the authorities say, because they're not, at the end of the day, like the government isn't like some robot who is on like the good settings or whatever and just does the most moral thing. It's a body of people who have power, and that power can be corrupted. And I think it, given that America comes across, or some Americans come across in a certain type of like patriotic in a way that I don't think we really are that. I mean, we can be patriotic in Britain, but I don't think it's like a different level of patriotism. I think it's important to kind of it in the film, it shows kind of that those two, you shouldn't be brainlessly patriotic, if that makes sense.
You'd be like lambs to the slaughter sort of thing.
Yeah, you need to have your own critical thinking and also pit your own morals against the morals of those who are ordering you around. If you are in something I would personally never be comfortable being in the army, for example, because I know that I have certain, I don't know, I just couldn't feel comfortable having this, someone giving me orders and not really knowing what the wider implications of that are. And I think that's basically what Steve learned.
Yeah. And also, on the governmental corruption is, there can be sentiments that kind of will creep along parliament or whatever government body that you're not even aware of. Just similar to the whole Hydra thing and how Hydra was, infiltrating and in these, prominent governmental bodies, and, they're basically fascist. And you look at, I don't know what's going on in America, but the recent renaissance that of the EDL and all these sus, nationalist parties that, if you're listening to America, they be here in Britain and they be out here,
I remember when they came to my hometown, Slough was the funniest thing ever, because why would you come to Slough to do that kind of protest? But anyway, sorry, Kerry.
No, that's fine. And also, I guess in this kind of technological era as well, the whole theme of mass surveillance and being able to watch people all the time. I mean, we had that recent thing when WhatsApp was we're going to be
in your messages.
Yeah, basically. And how private is our lives and how valuable people don't understand. They underestimate the value of data and their data and what people are actually tracking, your habits, to the point where Google could almost identify you by your browsing habits. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Would you say it was implemented well, the themes of surveillance and governmental corruption in Winter Soldier?
For Steve, I think it was. I think it added a new layer to Captain America. Because growing up, I never would have rated Captain America as a character, because America and all that jazz leave me out. But in terms of him as a character, I think it moved him on a little bit, developed him, exactly what Ram said, to be honest. So I think it did explore the themes very well, about government corruption and how absolute power corrupts absolutely. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, interesting. Yeah.
I'd say successful.
And I think also it was a turning point for Steve, because then after that he was I'm doing my own thing, because in Civil War he was not interested in signing nothing.
I'm gonna skip over Captain Marvel for time's sake. I know that sounds so bad.
That's the only woman. We can't skip over that.
But to be
woman.
Fair, I think some of those Captain Marvel scenes were sus though. Like
to be honest, I didn't really. Captain Marvel just felt such a. Yeah, I don't really think the themes were that deep.
Tell us how you feel, Ram.
I mean, the only thing I would comment on is I liked the thing of propaganda and xenophobia and how she was similar to what's going on in Attack on Titan, how she was trained to think that the Skrulls were this way and they're literally refugees on the run. I think that kind of literally mirrors how some people view the Middle East and some just other nations, and how you can have prejudices of people when you don't really know them or haven't met them. I think that's pretty neat. I don't know about the I just remember the scene when that guy was being a creep, and was that Wonder Woman? Not Wonder Woman, Captain Marvel, and then she stole his motorbike, or am I thinking of another film?
That was her, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Cause you that know it's the awesome. 90s and she's got a bike and a leather jacket. Apparently that's what they have in the 90s.
I think I tried to watch this film and I was the first 10 minutes I can get over her voice. But maybe I'll watch it again. I'll try and watch it again.
It was fine.
It was fine. I think it was just a bit frustrating because obviously she's the first female superhero in that or superhero film with her own film or whatever. Wow, I really butchered that sentence, but the fact that it just was kind of subpar as a film was really disappointing because she had so much pressure on her shoulders. But
that in itself
makes it political, if you get what I mean, because she is the first. But yeah.
Refer to that Black Cinema app when I quoted the Blackish woman. What is it? It doesn't matter how powerful the theme is, if the film's rubbish, ain't no one. Let's go on. Last but not least, certainly not least, we have Infinity War and Endgame, with the needs of the many versus the needs of the few. I feel like this is a whole conversation. I mean, to be honest, every single one of these films are a whole conversation, to be fair. Mm. I mean, my issue with this concept is I feel like sometimes it kind of negates from the fact that there might be enough for everyone, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Like,
instead of
there's just too many people for not enough resources. I think there's definitely ways to provide for more people, at least. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that the fact that that is ignored inherently kind of dampens this theme for me personally.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I didn't really think about the fact that they should be addressing the fact that maybe if we were all more equal, then those resources wouldn't be an issue, because there wouldn't be that power problem of like whoever has more power is able to live better or whatever, have more.
Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I think like it is an issue, even looking at the real world, the fact that Coke has the most water supply is an issue. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah that's but mad. That's
then it comes down to going, sorry?
No, do you know, it's just that, and also things like how much water it takes to like make a pair of jeans. People them ain't even got clean water, and we're throwing it on denim.
Mm. So yeah, and I think this comes back to the debate that me and Levi always have when it comes to capitalism. I'm not pro-capitalism because greed is an issue.
Yeah.
Which I guess kind of, I've never thought about this before. You know how people always make that argument of like, well, why didn't Thanos just make more? I feel like the reason he didn't just make more is because he's like, but everyone's greedy, so it doesn't matter if I make more. There's like someone at the top who's going to be like hoarding everything.
But then again, can you argue, but even if we get rid of half the people, we'll still
end up... That's true. That is also true. But maybe he got rid of all the people who were like... No, he didn't, because he said it was unbiased. Never mind.
I do think a couple, you know, on a lesser note, just the themes of like... I guess like survivor's guilt and just like the like repercussions of like the massacre, like, you know, I guess more in Endgame, and actually in general, just what we're seeing more and more now. Mm. Like, you know, at first it was just like you had Fat Four and Black Widow, you know, and Captain America doing the therapy, but also now we're getting
Hawkeye.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hawkeye. Like, so we're getting, you know, more and more how I guess. I mean, we kind of got it a bit with Iron Man in the first Avengers, but just how traumatizing, I guess a global genocide can be for people who were affected by it, but survived, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. I think also there as well, there is the question of like what Thanos effectively does is like, how far do we have to go in order to kind of save people or make things better? I think that when we talk about a lot of like political movements, we do kind of go to the extreme, because it's like you things are so ingrained in society that it almost feels like you have to start fresh. You have to do something extreme in order for anything to change. I think especially when we have, and no one take this the wrong way, I'm not a terrorist, but like—
I'm a revolutionary.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a revolutionary. But when you have like, you know, you're doing like peaceful protests or whatever and it's not working, it's like how much farther do you have to go in order to make something not an issue anymore?
Change, yeah.
because there's only like, you know, you can't keep doing the same thing and get the same result. So some people better start listening. Again, I'm not a terrorist.
And just to pick up what Ram was saying, when I speak to my girlfriend's family about the Philippines and how the Philippines has changed under this guy, what's his name? Presidente Duterte.
The guy that hates drugs, that's what I call him.
Yeah. Because he's very extreme. He's very harsh. And he's like, to the point where you guys can Google it. It's the funniest thing in the world. He puts out a video saying, Merry Christmas to everybody except for the criminals. And I'm like, that's hilarious. But his extremeness has changed the Philippines a lot. Like, a lot of people might be upset about the things that he does. But I speak to my girlfriend's family, who's of a different age and generation. They're like, well, something needed to be done because the Philippines was spiraling out of control. So, like, just to pick up to what Ram's saying, it's like, sometimes the extreme, you need an extreme to sort of steady or bring things back to normality. But just to give a question back to Levi, we discussed all the Marvel themes, but I think in the comic book verse, the theme that Marvel does brilliantly is undoubtedly is X-Men. And do you feel like this is the next stage for Marvel, Disney to sort of create the theme of the X-Men? Because I don't feel like we've ever had it in any of the movies. We've never had the theme of, like, because X-Men was built on that sort of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, mm-hmm. what is the best way of doing it, of coexisting with people? Like, do you think...
I mean, I'd say definitely yes, especially with the fact that now it just feels like Disney are just so confident in what they have that they're going to be more prepared to push the boat out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. With their projects. I think that's probably a big reason why we're not getting much of the X-Men news, is that they're really taking their time with that one because they know how big the X-Men are. But I definitely think they're gonna use that IP to drop some mad themes. And we got Madripoor in Falcon and Winter Soldier. That place has many heavy X-Men ties. I think Selby might be a mutant, apparently. Sorry, I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Oh.
You know the woman, Selby?
Yeah.
I think in the comics she's a mutant. I could be wrong, though. And I think Smiling Tiger might be a mutant, actually. I could be wrong about that as well.
That scene was hilarious.
Sorry, just to go off topic. Was that actually Anthony Mackie in the picture as well? Because I haven't gone back and looked yet.
I don't know, you guys.
Look like it.
Okay, do you think Infinity War tackled the needs of the many versus the needs of the few?
I think there could have been more nuance, especially considering that Thanos is a villain that they've been building for so long, and it's not until those movies that you actually figure out what he wants.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think maybe if they had built that from earlier, maybe we could have got a bit more of an elaborate kind of explanation, or like, you know, exploration of that theme. But I do think it was an interesting theme, and it did mean that he didn't come across as just like a 2D villain who's like, I just want power. Like, he kind of had noble intentions, kind of noble and murderous intentions, but you know.
I agree. I think it was thought provoking, if anything. And that's always good. That is it, but before we wrap up, we do have a bonus.
Okay, good, because I was gonna say I feel like you should do the bonus.
No, because I didn't put this in the MCU because it technically isn't in the MCU, but
I thought it is now. No,
We don't know yet, but anyway, we're talking about Jessica Jones and the themes of sexual assault. I guess that there's more kind of trauma as well, and gaslighting. I think what I really liked about Jessica Jones is when it comes to, like, you know, things like rape and sexual assault, usually we deal with like the point up until the bad guys got, if you get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think we don't get this whole, like, you know, you had that whole thing and then you've had to live with it, and then the aggressor has come back, if you get what I'm saying, sort of thing, because you don't go to jail for life for rape, if you get what I'm saying, or whatever. Yeah. There's a chance that person comes, you know, not, there's a chance. They usually come out and they're a free person. So I think making that the kind of setting was a really brilliant move. And I mean, I could go on about Jessica Jones. I really, well, the first season anyway. But Ram, I'll let you take it, because
I guess there's like numerous levels to it. I think one of the, like you kind of said, like the trauma of living with something like that and then having to face that person later on, and what that does to you, and the psychology behind that was really interesting to explore. And I think also, like, there aren't many stories about sexual assault or abuse that I think handle it with such sensitivity but also nuance. I think that Jessica Jones's kind of story felt very realistic but also felt respectful. It wasn't like they really took their time with how they kind of unraveled the themes and the impact it, and it wasn't like, you know, melodramatic. I think that a lot of people when they portray these kind of things on screen don't necessarily think it through properly, and it just ends up being like this melodramatic thing which is far from like the reality of what it actually is like. And I also think that one of the interesting things, what's his name again?
Kilgrave.
Is him, that kind of conversation between them of him not thinking that he raped her. And I think that that is something in recent years, particularly in Me Too, I think that people realizing boundaries which they hadn't thought were boundaries before, and that goes for like both women and men. I think that there are a lot of conversations these days where men used to do this thing and now have realized actually that was not okay. But I think also, like, on the flip side, that's the same with women as well, where it's like they've I don't want to say allowed certain things to happen because that doesn't sound right, but kind of take certain things on the chin, for example, or push it down without addressing why that feels wrong. And I think it was important to have both. Obviously, Kilgrave is like the villain and stuff, but I think it is important to address that this day and age, because it's not, you know, things like consent aren't as clear cut as, you know, we would like them to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, I think it was using Kilgrave to deal with this was so, I feel like his powers kind of helped tie into this in such a brilliant way of, like, we know what his power is, but then we're also aware that people are fully awake while doing what he tells them to do. So it kind of plays more into that same thing of what you were saying of, like, you know, did I actually consent to that? Did I let that happen? Did I want it to happen, sort of thing, of a victim thinking that it's their own fault, when in reality it's not. Josh, is there anything you want to add?
No, so I think Jessica Jones was a fantastic show, and you know what's amazing about Jessica Jones is the fact that this woman was totally powerful, because that's how some women feel as well. They climb a corporate ladder, let's say, and they feel like they've made it, they're powerful, and yet you can see that a man can weasel his strength and his powers away from them. And I think they touched on that as well as a point, and I think that's what's really sad about the world we live in today, is the fact that we still treat women as like a piece of meat at times, and it's just like you can be a super powerful woman and yet still be destroyed by a spineless man. Do you know what I mean? And maybe I've gone off on a tangent here, but I just feel like they've explored that theme very well, and exactly what Ram said, in terms of we don't really see that in superhero things at all. And sometimes it's all about reaching different mediums, like we said earlier, and what does a good message. And it's like, if you can reach somebody from a different medium, I think it's important that we keep doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she was definitely, just what you said about her, even though she's so powerful, she still was like, it was slash is a hot mess, if you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. She's not.
Yeah. I was just going to say, going back to like kind of the aftermath as well, I think also just the way that Jessica Jones builds her relationship with like men afterwards as well is something that we never really, like she kind of does have problems with like intimacy or like relationships and stuff. And that is obviously like what has come off of her interaction with Kilgrave. And I think that was also another important thing to address that we don't see often.
Yes.
So, I think we can say that's a success.
Yeah.
And with that, that is an episode, guys. Before we go, I don't know if I'm going to ask what you guys have been up to. I don't know if you guys have been doing anything exciting. I'm just going to say off the bat, I have been doing nothing new. Playing my Pokemon, playing my Valorant, playing the Medium, and watching Invincible, because that show is top tier.
Yeah.
Good. Ram, what have you been doing?
I have been burning through Claymore, and I'm really sad because I'm like, I have like 50 chapters left and I don't want it to finish. And like, I'm just like, why didn't you slow down? But I couldn't stop.
I'm still surprised you just got into it like that. Of all the things that I suggest to you to
that's because I felt like I discovered it on my own. Even though you had told me about it before.
Okay.
Even though you had told me about it before, I was like, this is my thing. And also, you don't really remember anything about it, so now I can tell you all about it.
Yeah, I watched it a very long time ago. I just remember like it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go watch the anime, even though I'm going to be really sad because there's going to be like some cool scenes that are never going to be animated. But I might start a campaign. They might
do. World Trigger dropped to season 2 how many years? So anything can happen, guys.
Yeah. So I've been doing that. I've been reading One Piece. And I feel like that's mostly it. I still haven't finished Zelda. I bought the expansion pack, so I may never finish. But you know.
I finished Attack on Titan, guys. I finished it. I now understand the memes of people punching screens at the fact that this is a season climax. But yes.
Josh. Oh, and Invincibles as well.
Huh? What?
No, I said, and I've been watching Invincibles as well.
Oh, okay. Josh, you've been doing anything interesting?
Didn't you say there's going to be more of them?
They lie. This is like the final season in 2 parts, and the second part is coming out winter 2022, I believe. I could be wrong. It might be winter 2021, actually. Anyway, Josh, what have you been doing?
Invincibles, I've been watching that. Solid show. Really good. Enjoy it a lot. Caught up with One Piece this week as well. I started watching the anime again.
The anime is so good. Yeah, winter 2022. But yeah, One Piece. Oh, the flashbacks are happening right now. Oh.
I know, that's why I need to catch up to that. And I'm not even that far off. I'm surprised that it's not that. It's pretty close. I'm not that far off. Finished Jujutsu Kaisen season 1. That was awesome.
I'm so sad.
Oh, yeah. And
I'm happy for Ram experiencing Claymore now. Because you see Claymore's OP, like in the anime.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Josh, me and Ram I've already done that. I've already played out a song and tried to do my own rendition very badly.
Very good. But other than that, I tried to get into DC's new thing, DC's sort of frontier thing. Is that what it's called? Yeah. I read the first Batman story, which is pretty cool. The Ghost, is it Ghostmaker?
Oh no, that's pre-Infinite Frontier. That was just before Future State. So the stuff that's Infinite Frontier since Scarecrow's come, basically, that's the Infinite Frontier stuff.
Okay, so I Ghostmaker was pretty cool. I like how new authors can bring in something into the Batman ethos and make it like super new, but still make it make sense. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I like Ghostmaker. He's pretty cool. That's all I have to say, guys.
I hear that. Guys, read X-Men. I say this all the time. Read X-Men. But yes, that's an episode. Ram, if you would kindly tell the people our socials.
We are the Nerd Alternative on Instagram. We are the Nerd Alternative without an E after the N on Twitter and Reddit. You can listen to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Google Podcasts, those of us, Anchor, just look it up, and passing over to Josh.
Don't worry about my socials, guys. I'm like almost a guest. I'm like slowly becoming a member, even though they're not in. But I'll be here next time. Just send out the signal. I'll be here.
The Halsden counselor signal in the sky. But yes, that is an episode. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan J.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoDuroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and parlay points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcast.